All right, my name is Tor. I work for Powel, and I would like to thank you for inviting me to come here and talk to you. I always like to have an opportunity to come to the Tri-City region, which I find is very nice. The topic for this talk is that we're going to be taking a swim in the Big Data Lake. But first, just a few slides about Powel. We're a company that who delivers software for tomorrow's energy and environmental needs. And we have software dealing with smart energy. That means optimizing renewable power production and also trading. And we have software for maintaining the smart electric grid, and also for doing collection of smart meter reading, smart meters. And we have software for water and sewage infrastructure, and also contracting software that to help build roads and tunnels and so on. So we are a Scandinavian company, and we have lots of offices in Norway and Sweden, but we also have a big office here in Gdansk, and as well as some offices in Denmark, Switzerland, and Turkey. So we just we opened an office in Gdansk a couple of years ago, and it's been growing quite fast. So I think we're now 50 or 60 people. So just 2 weeks ago, we moved to this C200 building near in central Gdansk, which is a historic building which has been renovated as office space. And we have lots of mostly developers there, mostly .NET developers. Some of them are here today. But we also have C++, Java, and web developers. And we also have some user experience experts, security experts, and testers. And we're often looking for very good programmers. So if you find any of this interesting, then please come and talk to us. Now we're going to take a swim in the Big Data Lake. So in order to do that, we'll need some data. And so I've prepared a case to do that. And the case is that we have these smart meters, electric meters, that collect a lot of data, or they collect some data, but there's quite a lot of them. And we would like to take this data from the meters and store it in the cloud. And we would like to take this data, and we would like to have a dashboard on it to monitor the collection process. And we would like to do some data queries, and we would like to do some prediction about consumption. Now that is the case that we're going to do. And so the building blocks to do this is that we're going to be using Service Fabric, as we just saw, for and setting up some stateful actors, that because we don't have any real electricity meters here, we're going to set up some simulators instead. And we'll use actors for that. These actors are going to send data to the event hub. And then we're going to process these events with stream analytics. And this is going to produce some outputs. One output is to just take whatever raw input you get and store that in the data lake, or store it in a blob storage. Storage is so cheap, so it's a good pattern now to just take the raw data and just store it, in addition to all the process data that you will also store. So if there is a problem in your logic, or if you want to fix some problem or something, you have all the existing raw data, and you can just replay everything and reprocess everything if you like. We're going to add another output for Power BI. And we're going to add another output for where we're going to do some processing in Stream Analytics, and also store that process data in another blob storage. And then we're going to take that process data, and we're going to run some data lake analytics, have a little bit of a view on U-SQL to do that. And we're going to do that to prepare some data that we can run machine learning on. And finally, we're going to have a look at a machine learning experiment in a web application. So it's quite a lot to cover, so we'll just get started. The data that we're going to look on, so as I said, we're going to simulate some meters. And this data is going to follow a seasonal pattern here. So I just have a very simple mathematical formula that will simulate a seasonal variation. So if this is, for example, is 1 year, so we start off in January with a pretty high consumption, and then in the summertime it is lower, and then in the winter it's higher again, and so on. And we also have a daily pattern, which is similar, but here you have one peak. This is supposed to be in the morning before people go to work, and then in the middle of the day it's low, and then when people get back to work you have a second peak. And now if you combine these two patterns, you get something like this. But in addition to that, we're going to add a unique consumption factor to each of the simulated meters, because people are different and everybody's energy bill is different. So we're going to simulate that with different consumption factors. And we're also going to add some random noise just to make the data look more realistic. So the simulators, as I said, we're going to run those on Service Fabric, and we're going to use the actor mechanism that Tomáš just showed us. So in effect, we're going to have one actor for each of the meters that we're going to simulate. But then somebody needs to send these actors a message and tell them to do something. So we need a booter actor as well to do that. And then finally, we'll have a client web application to just tell the booter actor to do the things. So here I am in Visual Studio, and this is the Service Fabric project, and the only thing it contains are the three different types of services. I hope you can all see this. So there's no code or anything in this project. It's just some configuration files and so on, and references to this. But the meter simulator actor, in there I have a small class with some logic, which is responsible for, well, it basically contains this method here. So it can take a date and a consumption factor, and then it will basically just it will find the time of day and the day of year, and it will plug that into these formulas that I showed you. So it will get the season factor, and it will get the time of day factor, and it will also generate some random noise using a helper function I have here. And then it will just factor all of this together: noise, consumption factor, season factor, and time of day factor. And that is the simulated consumption for this particular meter. Now, in a real case, in the real world, the meters will typically send a new reading every hour, and that becomes a little bit boring to watch. So in this demo, I let this do a reading every second instead. So it gets more interesting. This is the actor class, and as we can see, just as we saw in the previous talk, this implements an interface, and it's a stateful actor, as you can see here. And the way this works is that the first time an actor is being created, it needs to initialize some state. So what we're doing here is that, for example, we're giving it a unique meter ID, and we're giving it a random latitude and longitude, and a random consumption factor, and we initialize the meter reading to zero. And then whenever the meter is running, we actually use something called a reminder mechanism in Service Fabric, which is kind of like a scheduled job. So because if I just did this in a while loop, then the Service Fabric would think that the actor had nothing to do, because if if an actor doesn't get messages from outside, then Service Fabric will just think that it has nothing to do, and then it may get garbage collected. But if I instead register a reminder mechanism like this, then it won't get garbage collected. So that's basically what we're doing here, is that we, well, whenever it gets called, we call this function that we saw in order to generate a new consumption. And we, and here you can see we update the state that we have in the stateful actor. And then we generate a message, and now we just do it easy, and we just put this static data into every message. So there's a meter ID, and there's the latitude and longitude, and the time, and the meter reading, and also the consumption factor. And we'll just JSON serialize that, and we'll write it to an event hub. And this event hub here is initialized up here. And there's a connection string and an event hub name. And these are defined at the top here. So I have this event hub called this. And it contains a shared access key and so on in order to access it. So if I have a look at... at the portal in Azure. Actually, I will need to use the old portal here because some things are not in the new portal yet. But if I go to this service bus namespace, I can see event hubs here. And here is the one that we're sending events to. And you can see that it's been busy during the weekend, and we have sent a lot of messages to it. So, just quickly, a little bit about how this booter actor works. Because if I wanted to boot a certain amount of meters, what I do here is that the booter actor, I can tell that to boot a certain number, and then for each actor that it needs to boot, it will create a new ID, and it will create a proxy to this actor. So that means that Service Fabric will actually then generate this new actor, and then I will put that into a list of simulators, and I will send the actor a message and tell it to start. But the booter actor itself, so as you remember, I had a web application that I could use to talk to this booter actor. And in here I have a controller in this web application, and it's basically this just creates an actor ID which is hard-coded to this booter actor. That means that when I ask for a proxy to that, it will either get created if it doesn't already exist, or I will just get a reference to it if it already exists. And that is the nice thing with Service Fabric here, because all the states that you set in the actors, you can just set it and forget about it, and the Service Fabric will make sure to initialize the state whenever for example, an actor has been garbage collected, and then somebody sends a message to it, so it has to be re-initiated. Or maybe the server that it's running on goes down, and then it has to be started up on another server in the cluster. And Service Fabric will just take care of all of that. So that's very nice. Now, in order to deploy this, there's this nice thing that Microsoft offers, because you could of course set up your own cluster of machines in the cloud, or you could also deploy this to your local machine if you wanted. But they have this thing called party clusters, which is very nice. The strange thing about this is that it seems to have expired now, as in all weekend. And hopefully it isn't because of my application, but it might be. But anyway, how this is supposed to work is that they have a set of clusters here that live for a few hours, and then they get taken down, and then a new set of clusters come up. And they're free to use. Anybody can join a cluster here just by clicking join. And when you do that, you get an email like this, and it tells you the location of a cluster that you can just deploy to. And you also get an application port number. So if in the case where you actually have a web application client on the cluster, you can just set that up to respond to this port number, and it will work. So that is what I have been doing. So I have this Actor Booter web application. And you can see this is now running on this party cluster and this particular port number. So if I click on these buttons now, I will send messages to this booter actor. So we'll see that a little bit later. All right, so far I've sent, these simulators have been sending messages into this event hub. The next step now is to pick that up in Stream Analytics and process it. So I have a Stream Analytics job here that is running. And if I click on that, I can see under inputs that I have one input called meter data, and this one just references this event hub that I have. So this will just listen on the event hub, and any time an event occurs, it will get processed by Stream Analytics in close to real time. And the data it processes will have to go somewhere, so I have defined three outputs. So as I said, I had one archive blob storage output, and that is basically just a blob storage and the name of a container. And then I have a similar data blob for the processed data. And finally, I have a Power BI output. So we'll just have a quick look at the code that I can run in Stream Analytics now. So Stream Analytics is a SQL-like language, and you can do certain things in here. Now, just to show you the simplest thing first, which is this, and that is basically that I select everything from the input and just dump it into the archive blob. So this is as simple as it gets. But you can do more advanced stuff, and I have an example here where I have a temporary query. And what I wanted to do is that I can select meter ID and the latitude and longitude and the reading and so on from the current event that triggered this. But what if I want to know what the last reading and the last time was? Well, there is a function here called lag, which will go into the past and look at historic events. And the comma one here means that I want to have the one just before. I could have comma 10, then it would go 10 events back. And I want to restrict that to events with the same meter ID. So so this thing here is going to find me the time of the previous event for this meter. And similarly, if I do a lag on reading, I will get the previous reading. And I can also do this like a date diff and have a difference between the time and this lag time. So then I get the difference in milliseconds between the last two events. Yes, and I'm using that in the query down here where I insert stuff into the blob storage. So in addition to all these attributes that I get from the event, I also have these that I just calculated. And I also calculate an hourly consumption where I take now the reading minus the previous reading, and that would just be the second consumption. But if I multiply that by 60 seconds and 60 minutes, then I get what that would mean in as an instant hourly consumption. Okay. And the last thing I have at the bottom here, that's another trick that another nice function in Stream Analytics is that there's something called a tumbling window. So this means that tumbling window on 5 seconds means that whenever this query runs, it will show me the last, I will get the list of things events that happened in the last 5 seconds. And I can then, for example, do a count. That means I count all the events in the last 5 seconds. And if I divide that by 5, I get the number of events per second, which then would correspond to the number of meter simulators that I have. So that is one way to count the number of meters. And I can also do an average of the reading minus the average of the previous reading to get an average of the hourly consumption. All right. Okay, but at the bottom here I had this where I sent things into the Power BI output. And the way that works is that if we open Power BI, so Power BI is this tool that you might have seen where it lets you do all kinds of interesting charts and analytics. And as soon as I start this stream analytics job, it will create this data set here at the bottom called meter data set. It will just automatically be available in Power BI. And then when I click on that, I can see the fields that I have here, the meter count and the average consumption. And if I want to just quickly graph that, I can click on one of these and over time. And that will show me a simple chart. But I have also set up a dashboard in Power BI. And this is showing me the meter count over here. And this is live updated. This is a dashboard that is updating as we speak. So, but the times are in UTC, so you have to add 2 hours here. But you can see it updated. And this shows me that currently we have about 225 meters running. And that is because we have 200 running on the party cluster. And in addition, there's 25 running on this laptop at the moment that I just deployed. And we can see the average consumption per hour. And okay, that is obviously something that is trending downwards. This is just from the last 15 minutes. But I can see the same thing during the last couple of hours. And then you see this mathematical function very clearly here that was that I used to generate the simulated data. So you see we're at the top of a peak here now. Or we just passed a peak. I don't know what happened here. So as I said, we have 225 actors there now. If I go back to this booter application, and let's say I want to boot 100 more, then I can just ask it to do that. And it says it booted 100 actors now. And if I go back to the dashboard, it should show us what happened. It may take a few seconds. Now something seems maybe to be happening. Yeah, look at that. So clearly now we got over 300 rather than just over 200. While the average consumption, of course, doesn't change. Just the number of meters here now. And if I wanted to, I could stop them all or something, and then you would see that it would just fall down to zero here. So Power BI is quite powerful. You can do natural language searches as well. And if I wanted to see just the last 10 seconds, I can just write a query like this. Didn't like 10 seconds, 15 seconds, okay. And 1,000 seconds, and the last 10,000, and so on. Or, of course, I could write last 2 weeks, or something like that. Okay. Okay. So now we have seen Stream Analytics, and we have seen the output from Stream Analytics that goes into Power BI. But I also had a couple of other outputs from Stream Analytics that went into Blob Storage. And you can see here now in my Server Explorer that I have a analytics or Azure Data Lake analytics account, and I've connected some Blob Storage to that, and you can see the archive of raw data and also this business data Blob Storage. And if I want to, I can go to the Explorer here. And it will open the files that are currently in this storage. And what you can see is that it contains a number of JSON files, some of which are quite large. These, the largest ones are 10 gigabytes. And this is just all the data that I get from the simulated meters. So it, when I let it run for a few days, it accumulates quite a lot of data. Of course, gigabytes is still nothing when you when you're talking about a big data lake, but then this could easily be terabytes if you just had enough data. It would work the same way. So I have these JSON files here, and just to show you what the JSON files look like, I have downloaded some of it. It's basically a bunch of lines, one line for each event, and each line contains a JSON object here. And it contains the unique meter ID, the latitude and the longitude, and the time. And I also have this that the things that I got from Stream Analytics, the previous time, the previous reading, and the time diff, and the hourly consumption. And you can see that the time diff here is roughly 1,000 milliseconds with some variation. So the nice thing now is that with all this data, we can do some analytics on it. And I've created a USQL application here in Visual Studio. And I can create USQL scripts here as well. So I will just quickly show you a little bit about how that can work. So at the top here, I've declared a source, where to find a data source. And that is basically a reference to my blob storage, and then all the JSON files in there. I've also defined some constants to refer to some output CSV files. So what I do here now, I can just do it step by step. And for each file, it first needs to extract the lines, because each line contains a JSON file. Now, all of this would be simpler if this was CSV files to begin with, because then basically the built-in CSV extractor would just fix this. But since I have JSON files, I need to do a trick here. I need to call into some JSON function to deserialize this. And then I can just read the records from the JSON object like this. But here you see the really interesting part about USQL, which is the fact that you can add C#, and you have access to the .NET framework in here. And you can write methods in .NET if you like, and you can just plug them in here. There's actually even a code behind C# file here, so you can write lots of code if you want to. You have IntelliSense and things like that here for the .NET framework. So I can just daytime parse that, convert to universal time, and I can do stuff like this where the string is not null or empty, coming straight from the .NET framework. So then I can just do this step by step, and the next step is that I want to prepare some data for machine learning. So I select some data, and I'm particularly interested in the day of year and the time of day. And then I can just output this now to the machine learning output using CSV. So then that will just write the CSV file. Similarly, I can do some other things. I'll just skip this one. And I have this one at the end. Map data, select latitude and longitude, group by latitude and longitude, and then for each position, do a sum of the hourly consumption and just store that into a map output. So when I have all of this, I can submit this job, or I can go to advanced, and I can tell the system how many servers I would like this to run on, 1 or 20 or anything in between. And when I start it, I get a view like this, which shows me the progress of the job. And you can see now, I think Łukasz will get into this in more detail in the next talk, hopefully. Just shortly, you can see here it says a number of vertices. For example, here it says 9 vertices. That basically means that this particular part of the job can be parallelized on 9 different servers. And then even while it's just finished half of these and it's still working on some of the rest, it has started working on some of the next tasks here. So it will just do everything, and you see in the end it will create these CSV files. And even if we started with several gigabytes at the top here, we get less and less data until we end. In the end, we have smaller CSV files. So so when I've run this job, I have created these CSV files, and if I want to download them, I can just do that, or preview them, or download them. I already have one downloaded here, and the CSV file for the map output is going to look like this: latitude, longitude, and the sum of consumption. And if I put that into Excel, it will look like this. And if, for example, I wanted to have a nice map on that data, I can do that in Excel very easily. And you can see I've basically covered Poland here now with simulated meters. But these are just flat squares, but I would like to show the consumption here. So on the height of this, I can just select consumption, and then I get that. So that's it. That's all the aggregated data from all these gigabytes of meter data. Now this, the last thing I wanted to show you is what to do with this file, the features for machine learning. Now this is not a small file. This is 9 gigabytes, because this file actually, this hasn't aggregated any data. It still contains each and every event that came from the raw data. And if I would like to learn something from this data in machine learning, then I need to set up an experiment. And I've set up an experiment here for consumption prognosis, and it looks like this. You might have seen this kind of thing before. We have a reader up here, and you can see that this is connected to my blob storage, and specifically it's looking for this CSV file. And I can right-click that and visualize the data. And it will show me the data that it found in here. So here we can see the time, and we have this field where we created the day of year. And this is the number of seconds since midnight. And this is the consumption factor. And this is the hourly consumption that the simulated meter generated. Now what we would like to do is that we would like to see if it's possible to train this so it could in sort of learn this mathematical function or kind of reverse engineer it. So I would like to see if it's possible to give it just this data, the seasonal data and the time of day data and the consumption factor, and see if it's possible to predict the consumption. That means I don't really need the first column here with the time itself. So the next step I'm doing is that I'm excluding the first column with this step here. And then we get to a split of data where you split and you take some of this data and use for training the model, and you take the rest of the data and use for testing the model afterwards to see how well it works. And what you typically do here is that you might take 50%, for example, here and 50% here. But since we have so much data and we only really need a limited number of it in order to find this pattern, I'm just taking 1% of the data and sending it to training. And in here, I've chosen a particular regression model. Now, in machine learning, you have a toolbox full of things to choose from. So you can play around with different kinds of algorithms, but this one seems to work nicely for this kind of thing. So as you can see, I've already run this, so I have all these green check marks here. It took me about half an hour to run this when I had 4 or 5 gigabytes of data, so I don't know how long it would take now. But if I visualize this data now, I see the data that I saw earlier, and I see the real consumption here, and here I see the predicted consumption. So the first line doesn't look very good. But if I look further down, I can see that this one looks pretty good, and this one does, and this one does, and this one does. So there's quite a lot of data here that actually looks good. And then at the same time, there are some big errors here as well. And that is no surprise, really, because of the random elements that I put into the simulated data. And besides this, I don't know, this was just using a small set of data with perhaps not a lot of quality. And if I had really made a good effort, maybe I could have gotten a better model. Now, but if I want to show this, if I want to run this in a web application, I need to set up a web service. I can do that here. That will give me a so-called predictive experiment, which looks like this. And I can then click on a button here to deploy web service. And I've done that. And then if I click here, I can go to the web service. And this will show me some data. Here, for example, is a secret API key that I can use to access this web service. And here is some documentation on how to use it. And this will tell you exactly what the request should look like for this web service and what the response will look like. And it will also give you the full source code that you need to actually run against this web service. So it's very nice. In addition to that, I have this possibility to just test it here. I still need to put in this date, even though I don't use it. Let's say now I'm on day 100 in the year and 800 seconds into the day and consumption factor of 7,000. If I run that, it predicted now here 1.55. in hourly consumption. So okay, so the web service is working. And then finally, I just wanted to show that I've created a web application here now where I basically have a chart controller which is doing this same thing that you saw from the sample Here, so I'm using the API key and the address to the web service, and I'm doing some stuff here to send it some input messages and get some output, and so that I can chart that. So if I run that, it's just a standard ASP.NET application, and I have this very simple page here. And if I enter 4,000 as consumption factor, for example, now, it will show me this. So this is, let me explain. The blue line is just a mathematical model. This is kind of the ideal. And the red line is what I would typically get from a simulated meter when I've added this random noise. But the orange line here now is the line that comes from the machine learning web service. So this is what it has been able to learn about my my consumption pattern, basically. So it's not so bad. It's quite close to the blue line. And if I try with some different values, for example 7,000, I get some different charts. This one maybe looks a bit strange. Again, of course, if I had run this really properly, I probably would be able to get something that was very close to the blue line. If I give it just a very small number, something that it has never seen before, because the lowest it has really seen is 2,000, you see that it's totally missing, because it does not know at all. It has no experience with this low number, so it does not know something to predict. And the same if I give it a very high number, it will just predict far too little, because it has no experience with this kind of number. It doesn't know what to predict. Okay. Yeah, I guess that's what I wanted to show you. That's just a very quick swim in the big data lake. And yes, one more thing. If you want to have a deeper look at the code, I put it up on GitHub, so you can go there and have a look at it. And if you have any questions, you can contact me on Twitter or on this email address. Okay, thank you very much.